Final hour overdrive continues. Our buddy Chris Johnston, our TSN Hockey Insider, in about 10 minutes. Talk a lot about the NFL. Who's not talking about the NFL? See the ratings in Kansas City? It's like 90% of people watching TV were watching that game.
Yeah.
Which always makes me wonder, what are the other 10% doing? Like, I get it. I'm a sports guy, so I couldn't possibly fathom not watching that game, but what are the other 10% watching? If everyone else is watching the Chiefs game.
Was it like The Bachelor on or something like, you know, one of those like shows? Like there's a lot of
you never know what's on someone's screen, big guy. Never know.
10% could be up to something that you don't want to know.
I think there's probably some truth in that, or at least a tablet going that no one needs to see the Google history on. Anyway, CJ in about 10. The Leafs are in action tonight. Some history out in Vancouver where they have hired the first female assistant GM. Emily Castonguay has been hired as the assistant GM out in Vancouver. She's an agent. She was an agent, NHLPA agent, and now she's come aboard. And, you know, Jim Rutherford, he said that when he first got there. Remember, Jim Rutherford was forecasting not necessarily this hiring in particular, but he did speak of diversity within the workplace.
He
spoke about certain things being long overdue. And this is a trailblazing moment where you've got a woman who is now an assistant GM in the league. I think they're going to announce their GM shortly in Vancouver. But once you get your foot in the door, you know, anything is possible in the future. And
it's a pretty
trailblazing moment for the Canucks and for Emily.
She's been around. She's well respected. I mean, you know, her agency is really good, respected within the hockey world. Like, it was a matter of time. They hired Rachel Dorey the other day. You know, in the analytics department, she's sharp. Like, they, you know, you hire the right people, and obviously it is trailblazing, which is great. But you know, I think once you get into the room, like, anybody who's in there, you've got to be smart. You've got to be able to handle everything. And certainly their hires are capable people in the hockey world. So it's good. It's trailblazing. I'm sure we're going to see a lot more. You know, Ray's wife, Cammy Granato's, you know, a scout for Seattle. You know,
there's a lot of women that make their living in hockey and love hockey and play hockey and are well-versed in it as anyone else. And they're looking for jobs, and now they're getting jobs. It's a great sign.
Haley Wickenheiser here in Toronto.
That's right.
You know, does a lot of work. Like, there's, you know, quietly, I would say, you know, behind the scenes, but should be more out in front and good for the Canucks. I mean, you know, you have the longest history with Jimmy Rutherford. You know him. You know him as a person. He seems like a great guy. We've had him on the show several times. You know, I think he's an old school guy, but understands, you know, what the new world looks like. And mm-hmm. I've always respected him. Again, I've only come across him, not only on this show, but in the hockey world. You run into him, have a chat here or there in the rinks and stuff. Very nice man and very sharp. And I think he's not shy to be aggressive and maybe think outside the box. And I hope he gets things sorted out there in Vancouver. We've talked about it. They've got a real good young
players,
nucleus.
Some real good players.
Yeah, hopefully moving forward that, if a female is the best person for the job, they just get the job. I don't think she was done a favor here. It wasn't like Jimmy just wanted to get her the job to say he was trailblazing. He was confident in her abilities to do the job and felt she was best for the position. And hopefully years down the road, it's just standard operating procedure. If the female is the best person to have the job in a front office in hockey, then she gets the job. And she's going to be judged like everyone else. There's going to be no special treatment. If stuff hits the fan, they're going to be fired like everybody else, and that's just the way we go. But it's a great moment for her and the Canucks.
Yeah, no, exactly, and that's it. Now, and I don't think we're speaking out of turn. I'm sure we can speak for Emily here. She knows you got a job to do. She'll go in there and do it, right? And it's not something she's done before, so there's going to be some sort of a learning curve here like there is with any, you know, man that gets the job. But been around the game for a long time, obviously well-vetted, well-versed, and got the gig. And now, you know, it's out in Vancouver, there are going to be high expectations. It's not an easy market to work in. And it's a Canadian market with, you know, that's been underserved based on the way the team's been playing the last couple of years.
Yeah, and she's been in the game. She's been an agent. She's Lafreniere's agent. She knows the game and what goes on. There's some people, male or female, that are on Twitter. They draw cartoons about the NHL, and they think they should be running NHL teams, presidents, all kinds of stuff. No experience. They don't want to go to junior. They don't want to do else. They just draw graphs and cartoons, and they want to run a team. Maybe go get some experience on other teams. Go up the chain. Get some experience. Then maybe one day you can be the president of an NHL team. Just an idea.
Yeah. Well, I mean, experience, being in the game, I think that's always been a barrier, right, for a lot of people. I think women would say that. I think minorities would say that, that you the door isn't open enough for people to get through it. And I think what is represented here is, okay, the door's open. Someone had to make the first push.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Vancouver Canucks. And now Emily Castonguay will be evaluated like anyone else. How do you do the job? How does it work? And you know, it's there's a woman GM of the Miami Marlins, right? Like that was massive when she was given the job, and that was the beginning of
long tenure in the game. She had a long tenure in the game.
That's
what I'm talking about. There's some people, and it's just the way of the world now. It's like, I don't want to work for a junior team or go up the ranks. I just want to be the president. That's what I want to be. It's like, Jesus, Murphy.
Well, you're seeing, and it's no secret. Like a lot of longtime agents are sticking their nose in the management side. Kent Hughes in Montreal. Like, you know, it's because they understand the landscape of everything, right? Like agents, you and I had the same agency. Well, no, you had your family, but you know Newport. You know my agent Pat Morris and Donnie Meehan. Like, you know, those people are around the game on so many different levels. It's relationships, it's contract negotiation, it's CBA. You have to be well versed in that, and that's why it's no secret you're seeing a lot of player agents that, you know, are coming. We'll call it to the dark side into a management role, because it should be seamless. They're running their own agency as it is, and now they're just running a company that happens to be a hockey team and doing it from the other side. So they know the ins and the outs. They're smart hires, because if I wanted to know some things that go on behind the scenes, player agents are the first people you call, because they see everything. They talk to managers. They talk to players. They're as dialed in as anybody in the game. And you know, it's Emily, you know, you look at Kent, like a lot of people throughout the hockey world have had, you know, a little bit of background dealing with agents or have been agents or that type of scenario.
Yeah, no, they you can lean on them to paint a picture of maybe what the other side is going to be thinking in terms of, you know, contract negotiations, whatever it is. For sure. And you know, Emily Castonguay is just added to a long list of agents that flipped over. Like you mentioned, Ken Hughes just did it. Peter Chiarelli was there for the longest time. Todd Gillis or
Mike Gillis.
Mike Gillis was an agent for a long time.
Peter Chiarelli was an agent?
Yeah, I believe he was an agent before
there's,
he became.
There's a long list of agents that have like.
I thought he was. Maybe
gone
I'm wrong.
Over to,
I might not. I don't know that for sure. I thought I remember him being an agent though. Prior.
I don't know Chiarelli, but I know Chiarelli's been around. The Chiarelli was like with Ottawa. He's been around with a long time. But there have been agents that have slid over.
Kyle Dubas was an agent.
Exactly.
Or
you
in
know,
agency.
Agency.
You know, I don't know how big he didn't own one, but
I was an agent.
There you go.
Before you started with us, I remember running into you, at the Leaf game, and you were working with, like, was it Tux's group or some, I don't know, some group that, like, Tux got you involved in. Is that correct?
I didn't get paid, but I was with the Tux group, yeah.
You got gas money or something.
Oh, not even. I never even asked for that.
Just
and then one of the moms of the kids didn't like my Twitter account, so I got fired. And I'm like, how am I getting fired? I don't even get paid. I didn't even get gas money.
So you're like Kramer.
You should have been like, I'm firing you.
Right.
Like,
did you have a briefcase?
I was so mad. I was trying. I was that guy. I called the guy. I don't want to say his name, whatever, because Tux is my buddy. I called him 7 zillion times, and I'm like, you're firing. You haven't even paid me anything. How could you be firing me? And I took it seriously. I drove everywhere. I watched kids. I tried to help them. I tried to talk to their parents, which was a complete pain in my ass. because everybody thinks their kid's wing. I had one parent call me and say, I didn't like the reps he was getting in practice. Like, he was just like, he needs to, you know, the 3-on-2s, his turn wasn't, I was just like, how am I even dealing with this? I couldn't even imagine. Because a part of me wanted to
practice?
Say,
yeah,
like, dude, it was ridiculous. Like? It was ridiculous. So then I got to drive down to practice in this certain area, and then I got to watch the practice, and I'm like, what am I actually doing with myself?
You should send a retroactive bill to Tux. Yeah. And say, this is what I calculated you owe me on
gas.
Gas money.
Oh, it was at least $5,000 in gas money. Oh, I was going to Windsor twice a week. I was just watching nonsense.
I love it.
Barry. I had to go to Barry.
Peterborough. Like
I was driving around. What?
Did you have a business card?
I made my own. I got in trouble for that, too. Because this guy.
I need to see this business card.
I need it. Why did you get in trouble for that? What does that matter if you have a business card?
Because I was like, I took it seriously. I'm like, I want to be innovative. I want to have a cool business card. I got my own business card made up, and then I showed it to the guy, and they're like, what are you doing? You're better than everyone. I'm like, just why? I want a cool business card, and I'm just –
So
forget that.
You must have stacks of those somewhere. What are you doing with those business cards?
Dude, it cost me $5,000 for these cool business cards. They were made out of steel.
Okay.
So now you can clean your windshield with them.
Dude,
that's
I don't know where they
are.
Somebody has one somewhere.
Your kids
but I
use them as like a ruler when they're doing homework at home.
I want to see an O-Dog business card somewhere along the line.
I'll pay for one person.
We'll do a GoFundMe for a bit.
GoFundMe for one of because you know he's got stacks of them in the trunk somewhere.
Dude, as soon as I got fired, I lit. They're all in the dumpster.
Why? Why would you throw those out? That's an artifact. Exactly. That's in the Jeff O'Neill Museum one day. I need one of those.
Yeah. That is the best.
It's out there. We need Indiana Jones to find one of those cards, man. It's out there, and we need it. Here's Chris Johnston, our TSN Hockey Insider, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. What's up, CJ?
Not much. Just another day hunkering down, trying to avoid the weather, pretend I'm anywhere else.
It's nasty outside again. I mean, we're just getting hit. We're getting hammered with the snow.
CJ, I got a question for you, bud.
Oh, no.
It's a question. I know you're a jogger, and 2022, I've gotten back on the horse. How do you get better, let's say, for beginners? Let's say for a big guy.
Oh.
Are you actually jogging?
Yeah, like I'm doing interval work in the underground garage right now because it's so cold out. So I'm doing like some 3-minute sprints, some 2-minute sprints, some 1-minute sprints. I'm just trying to get this body moving. But one day I want to just be able to jog 5K. That's it. That's my starting point. I want to be able to jog 5K. Thoughts about
that? Well, I'm certainly not qualified, but I would say the key is consistency. So do it pretty much every day. And even if you have to walk, I would say just walk, and because eventually you'll get to a point where you can keep running it. So, you know, I think the hardest thing when you're starting is it's discouraging when you get out of breath easy or whatever, but you just got to keep doing it, and it does get easier.
Do you ever jog and like a just a monster guy passes you jogging? Do you see that often or no?
Not too much because I'm pretty alone out there these days. Like I went this afternoon and there wasn't a lot of other people sharing the road or the pathway. But definitely on the waterfront trails in Toronto. I mean, there's some speedy guys down there, and I'm certainly not fast.
So you're like one of those heroic runners that even when it's this cold and snowing, you're out there running?
Yeah, I haven't missed a day in about 630 days. So,
wow.
Is there a treadmill at where you live or anything? Or do you like running outside?
I think I'm annoyed by that. Yeah, I'm trying to wrap my head around it. I think I'm bothered by that.
You're
I credit
allowed
you,
to be.
But okay.
I honestly, the last week, I've gotten more dirty looks from people than ever. Like I can tell. There's so many people that don't even want to be in their cars looking at me like you're just getting in the way because, you know, not all the sidewalks are always plowed properly. And I mean, but yeah, there's no treadmill action for me. I prefer to go outside. I mean,
oh, good for you.
That's awesome. In the world where I was traveling, which I just haven't been traveling much for my, you know, my other jobs, I would do a treadmill in a hotel or something, but I haven't been on the road in a little while.
That's outstanding. You know what I think a lot of the dirty looks are is New Year's resolutions that were blown up in smoke on like the third or fourth day of the year. And there you are out still grinding and people know they're supposed to be, but they're not. But credit to you, man. And there you go. Oh, yeah. Take that advice. Give them your card. You guys can meet down at the waterfront.
Dude, don't bring up the business card again. I swear to God.
I'm going to get that corroborated. I need to find one of those. I'm finding one. It's my life's mission to find one of your business cards.
We're calling Tux.
I'm going to text
Tux
and ask him if he has one. If he has one, I'm getting it from him. We were talking about Emily Castonguay being hired as an assistant GM out in Vancouver. First woman to be an assistant GM. There has not been one, obviously, to be a GM either. Kim Ng is a GM of the Miami Marlins in baseball. It is happening. The doors are opening, and women are, you know, they're walking through. What do you make of the significance of this, and what do you think it's going to mean for women in the sport of hockey?
Well, to me, it's very significant. And, you know, I saw Emily's availability with the reporters in Vancouver, and, I mean, man, was she well-spoken in terms of, you know, how she fits into the front office. You know, she's got law degrees and a lot of education, and then obviously the on-the-job experience as an NHLPA certified agent before this. And so she's going to have a significant role in her front office. And, you know, I look back at these last few years, and, you know, we have more and more women, you know, officiating games, you know, mostly at the AHL level. But you know, it's coming at the top level. There's more coaches starting to filter into the ranks. You know, obviously we're going to, you know, I think we'll see more and more people like Emily, like Rachel Dory, who also got hired last week by the Canucks, in an analytics role in front offices. And so I do think that it's going to happen pretty quickly here. And, you know, certainly Emily has all the qualifications, you know, far, far than based on her sex. You know, she said that Jim Rutherford never even, you know, basically addressed that with her. She doesn't feel as though she's been hired to kind of, you know, fill a box or meet some requirements. And so, yeah, I think a lot is changing pretty quickly. And I think this is just the beginning of, you know, getting, you know, a female in a position of as a general manager. And as I mentioned, I think coaching and officiating and all that's going to follow pretty soon after too.
With Chris Johnston, our TSN Hockey Insider, the Leafs and Sheldon Keefe decided to mix up the lines today. And I'm intrigued by this. In fact, I like it. I like the idea of going down this road. He's got Bunting with Matthews and Kasha, Mikheyev with Tavares and Marner. And on the third line, he's got Kerfoot with Kampf and Nylander. There it is up on TSN, too. In other words, he's got Matthews, Marner, and Nylander all on separate lines. What do you make of his reasoning, and how long do you think he might last with this?
It's unclear to me how long he'll go with it sort of in the short term, but, you know, what crossed my mind when I saw that he did this today at practice was, you know, last year when Marner and Matthews struggled in the playoffs, I mean, he stuck with that, right? He didn't go away from that at any point in that series. You know, I think obviously his bet was, you know, this worked all year. These guys are going to find it. I believe in my guys. But I just wonder if, you know, they're getting some different ideas of things they might do should, you know, things not be working at a key point in the season later on. And so I see it as sort of, you know, testing for what might be useful when they get in a playoff series in particular, where obviously the matchups come into more focus, where, you know, you might get to a point where Matthews and Marner in particular, if it doesn't go well for a couple games, and we're all bringing that up and, you know, getting back talking about the history that they've had in the postseason. You know, and I think it's giving the Leafs a little bit more of a look. And you know, honestly, the really good teams now have three solid lines that contribute. And the Leafs fancy themselves as one of the good teams. So I like it. It comes at a good time. You know, the Tavares unit has gotten stale here the last little bit. I think Matthews has actually played awesome. And so I do feel like you can almost play him with anyone, and that line's going to be productive. But, you know, finding a way to get Tavares going and getting Nylander back up to where he was, you know, a few weeks ago is a priority. And you know, when the Leafs have won as much as they have, I think that they have the benefit of being able to experiment a little bit because, you know, we've all said it 100 times, but they have to find a way to be at their best to have a chance to perform when the playoffs come, because that's how the season will be measured. And I see this kind of as the next extension towards that, is just giving themselves more options for, you know, whatever teams might throw at them down the stretch.
I agree. I think Mikheyev and Kasha deserve looks higher in the lineup just based on, you know, their ability to kind of settle in. My only, if I had to take one slight negative peek at this, is how does William Nylander view this? Because you know, is that viewed as a demotion? Is that viewed as, hey, we're just going to spread the wealth? Like, you know, we can view it any which way we can because we're breaking it down from the outside. How does the player who's having, you know, statistically a career year, correct? The point of game right now, 38 and 38, you know, view going, hey, great, I've got David Kampf and Kerfoot passing me the puck now. You know what I mean? Like that, is that at all any concern? Would that be a concern? I'm asking all three of you guys.
That's what sticks out to me as well. That
wouldn't be too happy about it, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, he's just having a career year, right? And it's well, I think the comparison for Willie is always going to be Marner. Well, put Marner on the third line, right? Like, leave me with Tavares or put me up with Austin.
Right.
Why not put Mitch on the third line? But he is still with Kerfoot, who he's been with all year. I think it's another challenge, and he's been treated differently. He gets challenged differently, and Sheldon Keefe is pushing that on him. And if I'm Nylander, I'm using the example of Phil Kessel to motivate me here, because I think what Toronto's doing here is they're looking at the way Pittsburgh won back-to-back cups, and they're saying, we need the same thing. They had Sid, Gino, and Phil on three different lines. Phil was on that HPK line. Remember how great he was? He was outstanding. I think he should have won the Conn Smythe that first year. And I wonder if that's a part of it as well. Spread the wealth, and don't look at it as a demotion. Look at it as it's your line now. You're a big boy. You can do it yourself. Go drive it, Willie. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's the conversation they're having.
Right, but I think, Noodles, you make a good point. Like, it's how you sell it to him and how he hears it, too. You know, the coach can say one thing, but the player might hear another or think another. You know, that is a concern. Look, and Kampf, too, like the way he's deployed the third line this year is he's fed Kampf a ton of D-zone starts. Kampf's performed well in those minutes in terms of, you know, getting the puck in the other end of the ice and playing offense despite, you know, where he's starting. But I'll be interested to see how he deploys it. You know, maybe this opens up a chance where, you know, he'll swap Kasha and Nylander a little bit in game, and so get Nylander some reps with Matthews. I mean, maybe there's a little bit more that we'll go into it to try to keep him happy. But, you know, this is I guess the good news and the bad news if you're the Leafs. You have lots of offensive talent, but there are certain situations where it can be difficult to keep everyone happy and to make everyone feel important when you have, you know, this many high end offensive players.
Chris, the incident that happened in the East Coast League regarding Jordan Subban, I believe, is that being investigated? Because I know there was allegations, and then the kid tried to come out and make an apology, said that was none of his intention. How is that proceeding? Are they going to try to find evidence of him being guilty, not guilty? Where is that situation at?
Yeah, the ECHL is conducting a disciplinary hearing into that. You know, I imagine that they'll take into account what Jacob Panetta said, you know, in the video released last night, that he's made a similar gesture in the past, and that it's meant to be a bodybuilding type gesture as opposed to, you know, something that Jordan Subban and even the referee in that game interpreted as a racial gesture. You know, I don't know how that's going to play out. You know, I would assume.
Well, if he says there's evidence of that, they just got to go back and say, tell me the game and let me see it, and then it's believable, right?
Potentially, yeah. I mean, I think it's important, too. Like, you and I weren't on the ice. Like, we saw the grainy ECHL video. Mm. But, you know, I think it's important, you know, what was said in that confrontation, you know, and only a few people know that, and that'll be part of it. And you know, I think it's also significant, too, to keep in mind that, you know, I don't think anyone's suggesting Jordan Subban would make this up. I mean, he felt that it was a racial gesture. The referee also gave an additional game misconduct for what he thought was a racial gesture. So it wasn't just the, you know, Jordan Subban in this case, the referee thought that too. So, you know, the easy answer is there's a disciplinary process. I would imagine there'll be some length of suspension, or I guess if everyone comes to an agreement that this is a big misunderstanding, maybe not, but there will be some kind of ruling on his status within the league. You know, his team, the Jacksonville team, released him yesterday, but, you know, he conceivably free to be placed somewhere else if there isn't a punishment here. And so that's still an ongoing process.
Yeah, this story is not going to be over anytime soon. That's for sure. The ECHL suspending Jacob Panetta indefinitely. But as you mentioned, his team just cut him. So he's who knows if he'll play again in the ECHL. He's not a player I'm familiar with, but I know the Subans. I mean, everyone knows the Subans. They're one of the most famous hockey families in the world. So, yeah, we'll track that, see where it goes. Appreciate it as always, Chris. We'll do it again soon. Thank you, buddy.
All right, boys. Be well and good luck. Go with your running, bud. We'll check in next week on that.
Well, maybe the week after. See you, pal.
Quick week off. Early into it, we need a break.
Yeah.
There's Chris Johnston, a TSN hockey insider, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. They take away the fears of buying a pre-owned vehicle by sharing service history, lean history, and accident history. Find out more at MapleToyota.com.
Is he saying that I got to do it every single day?
Well, that's what he said.
That's what he does. He's an inspiration for you. I don't think you got to get carried away.
No.
Like seeing people run when it's snowing and freezing, I just
don't
understand.
Dude, I'm right on Lake Ontario, and it's so cold and windy, and there's people like just in spandex hats and small gloves, and it's
loving
like
it.
Nothing's happening out there.
Loving it. Yeah, right in their element.
Just wear a balaclava, like a face mask. That's what you need.
There's I guess if you're running long enough and you're working out enough, you're going to sweat. You know, you're stay warm. But
I used to love, like I lived right there, but the Tip Top Lofts, I used to love running waterfront. Mm-hmm. But that was the summer. I wasn't, in the winter, I had a treadmill. Like I didn't go out in the snow.
Right.
You don't feel like you're slipping and sliding. I always felt like I just wasn't comfortable.
That would be the worst, the traction. You blow a wheel and separate your shoulder running like a hero on ice and in the snow. But never forgive yourself. Imagine you lose your golf season because you're being a hero out there. Don't do it, O. Yeah. Don't do it. Do it. You're doing the right thing indoors. Yeah.
You're walking in the, what did you say, in the parkade?
I go down to the third parking garage and I run like Rocky Balboa around the cars, like in a track.
That's awesome.
Okay.
That's awesome.
Like we're learning a lot today.
And
I like it.
I love it.
All right, we'll get back into these Lions down at Leaf practice and what we make of it. If you guys see the Penguins analogy, does that sit well with you? Can you see where I'm going with that? We'll come back and get into it a little bit more and continue to recap a wild weekend in sports. And John Rahm, some audio on the course out at the American Express. We might try to squeeze that in if we can as well. He wasn't overly ecstatic. And we're at Torrey Pines on Wednesday, the rare Wednesday through Saturday tourney at the Farmers this week. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN2. All right, so we've been talking a little bit about the Lions down at Maple Leaf practice today, and they're mixing up the Lions, and they're moving the big three around. I guess Tavares would be included in terms of the big four, but they're going to go with this, I believe, on Wednesday. Things might change between now and then. We know Sheldon Keefe mixes up the Lions all the time. 5 minutes into the game, these may come to an end. But he's got Bunting with Matthews and Kasha, McKayev with Tavares and Marner, Kerfoot with Kampf and Nylander. A couple things stick out there for me. Sundin, for years, was always a guy that would go out there and just throw a couple of wingers with him that can work hard, and he'll take care of the rest. I think Sidney Crosby's had that reputation. I think Datsyuk had a reputation like that. And I wonder if this is a sign of where Matthews is at. Like when Marner was out with his injury and then COVID, he was chugging with whoever was on his line. And I thought he looked pretty good with Bunting and Kasha. I think it says something that Bunting has just attached himself to Matthews, and I think he deserves to. Bunting's been really good with him. Another thing on that front is, remember Babcock used to do that from time to time? Hyman and Brown with Matthews, and people would freak. How dare you do that to Austin? It's funny, what goes around comes around, because I think Sheldon's basically doing the same thing, because he believes Matthews is capable of riding with whoever he's got. You put a couple guys who work hard, and he'll score. But Noodles, you mentioned that the outlier here might be the fact that Nylander is not with Matthews or Tavares.
Right.
And he's on the line with Kerfoot and Kampf. And I immediately, when I saw that, thought of Kessel with Pittsburgh in those cup runs, where Phil was not playing with Gino or with Crosby. He was on a third line with Nick Bonino and Carl Hagelin. And it worked. And the thought process was spread the wealth, put guys who can dominate offensively on all three lines. Worked out pretty well. I wonder if there's a similar line of thinking here.
There's all kinds of different angles to this, Hayes. The first one being, if there are no offenses going in the first period against Anaheim on Wednesday, he could have Tavares on a line with Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews. You look at the perfection line in Boston, they're together sometimes. Right now, Pasternak is playing with Hall in a secondary line, but it seems like they always kind of go back to what's normal and what helps them have success. Because the one thing that can happen when you do this is nobody really gets cooking. Because to win games and to get on a roll, you want guys cooking, you want chemistry. And when you separate everybody, sometimes you do that and you have depth and you you beat teams by 1,000 cuts. You know, this line gets a couple, and you guys chip in, and you guys chip in. But sometimes it doesn't work, and nobody gets going. So yeah. Then you got to readjust and think. But I think what they're just doing is experimenting. They're trying, maybe trying to press some buttons and make guys aware that, you know, 30 games from now, we want to be at a level, and we want to have some options or different ideas to counter stuff that happens in the playoffs.
I agree. I think it could be more that they'd like to see Mikheyev get some, you know, reps a little higher up. Same with Kasha. I don't think it's a slight on anything. My concern, and concern is the wrong word. Kessel was a lot like, I mean, different player, but Nylander, like, I think Nylander is a second tier star. I don't think he's a superstar. I think he's a really good player. Having a career, it's 80 points, you know, so that if he gets the Kessel treatment on the third line, they trust him to either drive that line to help them out or to give that depth scoring when you're getting maybe a little bit lesser matchup. The only thing that I brought up, the reason why I brought it up, aesthetically, it looks like this guy's been demoted to the third line, right? You know, that's the only thing. How does that deal with his psyche? You know, is he going to skate around with the lip on? You see it on every night within the league. Other teams, top players, they get moved around. You can see their demeanor. Is it going to affect him, or is he a guy that just kind of happy-go-lucky, just goes out and plays his game? Like, it could work either way. And then it could also, you know, look at the chemistry. Maybe he ends up hitting it off with, you know, him and Kerfoot have something good. Maybe Kampf is just a really nice complimentary situation where he's really responsible. I think it's just trying stuff out. And the other thing is, it's Monday. They don't play till Wednesday. Like, things could look a lot different.
Yep,
like, I think there's so many different things. We just talked about Sheldon calling his team soft, and there was context or not context and all of that. Like, he's doing things to think outside the box. He's doing things to challenge his team. I think he's pressing buttons to see who's going to respond, who's not going to. You know, I come back to Mikheyev and Kasha getting a little bit better looks and higher in the lineup because they've earned it. So, you know, you have the luxury. You're not even halfway through the season yet. You know,
Keith said that after the practice today. This is something he's wanted to get a look at for a while, and he wants to get a look and see, you know, how the opposition responds. That's part of it too.
And the last thing, sorry to interrupt, is they're healthy, knock on wood. He hasn't been able to do that because he hasn't had all these players at his disposal, right? Like, that's the other thing. He even said, hey, we're healthy enough to try these types of things.
Yes, and I think the answer to why it would be Nylander there instead of Marner is Nylander's a better goal scorer and has the ability to be the goal scorer, be the guy you want to have the puck on a stick when it's time to finish, right? Where Marner is not, just doesn't have that same
playmaker
capability. Yeah, he's a playmaker. Now, if the third line is going to be thought of as your checking line or a line that would go up against the opposition's best offensive players, that would make more sense for Mitch Marner, because I think Marner is a better overall defensive player than Nylander.
I agree.
You know, again, that might get tested out. Maybe Marner gets a game or two on that third line, quote unquote, where they take a look at that. And I think it's a luxury that the Eastern Conference is playing it the way it is. You want to win games. You want to fight for home ice. You know, but as it's currently going, you're looking at Florida, Tampa, Toronto, Boston are all going to make it, and they're all in a good spot. And it's about jockeying for position. So if you are comfortable, then you have the ability to possibly test some different things out.
There's all kinds of levels to it. You might, you know, you looking back on an NHL career and noodles and goaltending, I'm not sure. I'm sure the coaches wanted the goaltenders to feel a little bit more comfortable, but it's just, you know, maybe just make guys feel a little bit off kilter, a little bit anxious, possibly a little bit nervous. Maybe William Nylander goes out there on that line and he's pissed off about it and he responds and he's the best player on the ice. And that's the reaction that they wanted. Just like the coach calling out the team saying we were soft, we were not playing with a purpose, they respond. So I don't know. There's all different. They might be just checking things out. It might be just a practice day where they were feeling a little bit creative. They wanted to do something. Or maybe it was just make guys a little bit uncomfortable and just make them put the seed in their head that you are not on that line automatically, regardless of what you think, where you should be or what your role is, or you play with this guy no matter what happens. That's just not the case. So there's a zillion different avenues or angles that the coach or anybody that's put this together could be thinking.
And this was probably overdue. I mean, it just became natural. The four guys that make the most money, best players, they all play together. Well, it doesn't have to be. I mean, who wrote that book?
Right.
And just became married to it. You know, you can move pieces around the lineup.
Well, and that's the other thing. We have no idea. Wednesday, there could be an injury and all of this changes, and you can start moving things around. First period, doesn't like what he sees. He starts loading lines up. Like, you know, the ability to be creative, this is the thing that I don't mind whatsoever about Sheldon Keefe. He's not shy to be like, you know, whose language I like a little bit more, and it's, you know, smaller market, like DJ Smith. He pulled his goalie the other night. He's like, didn't have it. That's all he said. He's like, goalie didn't have it. I went to the other guy. I didn't, you know, I put my lines in the blender because I didn't like what I was seeing. Like sometimes
that when he pulled
just,
the guy and it was
then the goal
disallowed.
Got called back. Yeah, they're disallowed. He flat out. So they make it 3-1, and then they call it off on an offside. So it's actually 2-1. He goes, waves the goalie in, just like stay in there. And they said, why didn't you put Forsberg back in? He goes, didn't have it tonight. Like sometimes, like, you know, we take offense to it, but he's being honest. He's like, this is what I saw from my players who I feel I know. And you know, last night they played, I'm just talking about Ottawa, he threw the lines in the blender. He's like, I didn't see that line going, so I put Batherson down here. Like, sometimes, you know, I think Sheldon Keefe's really good at that. Like, he's not shy. Obviously, you stick with and give your opportunity to certain guys in certain pairings just because you know that those guys are talented enough to dig it out. But I don't mind moving guys around, giving them a little prod here or there. That's coaching.
It is coaching. I think he's got an eye on the big picture. Like, I know that was sensitive last week when we got into it, but I think Sheldon Keefe is curious as to how this team will react. And I think he's poking and prodding at feelings in a way too. You know, challenging guys. Like this, as much as Nylander moves down, Mitch Marner's not playing with Austin anymore either. You know, at least on practice. Again, you don't want to make a mountain out of a molehill. Who knows what it's going to be like come Wednesday. But I think Marner's always wanted to play with Matthews. I think they like playing with each other, and hey, not the case. Now, you're going to play with Tavares. It's not like that's going to be a big issue for you. But yeah, I mean, I think Sheldon Keefe is coaching in the moment, and that's what you've got to do, but there's always a big picture in mind. And the fact that you've banked as many points as you have and you're looking really good in the regular season and you got a big gap between yourself and the next team that's out of the playoffs, it allows you, I think, a little bit more room and freedom to poke and prod and see where it's going to go, because, you know, the pressure's on this team to perform in the playoffs and win and go on runs, right? Like, not just win a round. Like, you got to be set up to and ready to go. And that means if you're playing Tampa in the first round, so be it. Florida in the second, so be it.
Right.
Washington.
There's
in
no
the
other
third,
there's
so
no
be
there's
it.
Nowhere like, to run, man. There's
yeah,
just it's
you're
right
gonna run
there.
Into a good team that's coming at you. So what do you got? You know, like everyone knows that's and that's what the whole season's about. And this Leaf team getting an opportunity, at least the carryover players, an opportunity to rewrite history and change up the reputation and shut a lot of people up. And that's where they're going. So
yeah, well, that's what they – you're right. It's a
but
work
it's on
in
them
progress.
To do it. Yeah, and exactly. I think the players get it too. I think the players are well aware. Like, I credit the players. The Leafs have not – they haven't been complaining or anything. Nothing gets said that's out of line. Or they're businesslike. You know, they're just going about their business. And even the empty building and stuff, I they're not really speaking on that. They're just going about their business, and they have to deal with it. It is what it is. It's out of their control. Nothing
yeah, well,
you can
imagine
do.
They've been told. It's like, don't even think about going in front of the camera and saying this blows playing in front of zero people, because we know it does, so don't even bother saying it.
Nothing you can do. It's not in the control of anybody. It's, you know, the government's going to make that call. They've put in place this timeline to start turning things back around and get going again. And, you know, in a few weeks, I think they'll be 50% capacity, and in a month and a half, they'll hopefully be a packed barn again. And the stretch run in the playoffs, hopefully you got a packed house and it's all good. You know,
I
nothing
agree.
Else you can do. That's the hand we've been dealt at this point. Come back and recap a crazy weekend in the NFL. Some of the stats that were popping up over the weekend. Like, I was just archiving everything. It's like, okay, that's interesting, that's interesting, that's interesting. We'll review some of that and start looking ahead to what should be a fun weekend next week. And only three more games left in the NFL. Team Outdog, they're in a good spot. You guys are two games above 500. Mm-hmm. I'm chasing it. You guys are seeing the board. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, so we've been really trying to figure out what we witnessed all weekend, looking back on a crazy weekend in the NFL. I saw the NFL's research Twitter page tweeted out, the four games in this weekend's divisional round were decided by a combined total of 15 points for an average margin of victory of 3.8 points per game. That is the lowest average margin of victory in NFL playoff history in a round with at least four games. Crazy thing about that is the one that would have really kind of thrown the numbers out of whack is the one that went to overtime, because that game ended being won by six instead of won by three. The Bills-Chiefs game was the first playoff game in NFL history with three go-ahead touchdowns scored in the final 2 minutes of regulation. So,
it's crazy.
Yeah.
That was a crazy game.
I kind of hate it that that game that happened so early, or that game was supposed to happen maybe next weekend. I don't know. It just seemed like, how do you top that? Like, are we going to get two blowouts next week, or what are we getting next week?
I think we're looking at Rams-Niners being a low-scoring battle, like a bloodbath type of game, physical game. And I mean, as of now, I don't see how the Bengals keep up with Kansas City. I don't know. I haven't seen the line. I'm sure it's out there. I would guess it's, 5.5, 6.5? It might be more than that. It might be 7.5, 8.5. Like, it's a playoff game, so you would think
right
it would be, you know, somewhat close. And the Bengals did beat them a few weeks ago, but that was in Cincinnati during the regular season. You know, let me see. I bet you they've already got the lines up. It's 7 right now. Chiefs by 7. 7. I'll bet you that. I would guess that'll move the other way. I could see it 7.5, maybe an 8-point spread by kickoff. And the Rams are 3.5-point favorites to open. So, early look at that. I'd probably lean Niners-Chiefs, but who knows? We'll see.
You think the Niners are going to beat the Rams too?
They look like the same team that went to the Super Bowl 2 years ago.
It's so crazy watching the Niners play. It's like fans, Duthie will be like, oh, Jimmy G doing Jimmy G stuff whenever he throws a pick or whatever.
I hate Jimmy G.
I know. It's like Jimmy G, after watching Brady for so long, is like this loose cannon out there who loves to turn it over and do stupid things, but he seems to get the job done.
Well, and that's why, again, I place so much blame at the feet of Aaron Rodgers, because I know that it's more to it than just him and the special teams.
Right.
But Jimmy Garoppolo put 6 points on the board. 6. At Lambeau, you're coming off a bye. You can't beat Garoppolo and the Niners when they put 6 points on the board. it's insane.
Yeah. It's usually a gift. That's what they got, and just go ahead and do your thing and you beat them.
It's a gift. Like 13, the opposition scores 13. You're at Lambeau coming off a bye and you're healthy. No excuse for losing that game. None. But they did, because Garoppolo, it's the same thing next week. And they've got a feature back in this Elijah Mitchell. They've got Deebo Samuels, the craziest player in the NFL, or one of them. And him and Cooper Kupp will go back and forth in terms of making big plays. But you can hand the ball off to Deebo Samuel. You got to throw it to Kupp. You got to throw it to Adams. That's the amazing thing about Samuel. That's why he's a unicorn. He run routes, but he can also run out of the backfield. He ended that game the other night, 3rd and 7. He broke, two or three tackles?
He's an awesome talent. That guy can play, man.
He's outstanding. Yeah, so I don't know. I could see the Rams winning it. I'm just saying I'd probably take the points as it currently stands, but we'll find out on Friday when we make our picks, and I'll see what Al's brother is saying about that.
Well, right? You got to dig in. Now that your team is out, you got to dig in. You got to see the board cleanly.
Thank you.
And don't fall for that nonsense.
No, I feel good about running the table, I'll be honest. I actually really do. I feel very good about it. But
it's all about how the so-called hat game goes.
Yeah, I guess, is the grappler going to have to do that one more time and then a coin flip for the Super Bowl, and who picks the Super Bowl? Or
I guess. Okay. How else can you do it? There's no other way to do the Super Bowl.
I can do the coin flip.
Yeah, it's not really fair, though.
What do you mean?
One guy calls the Super Bowl and the other guy's stuck with it? I mean,
I know. Well, we could do a total, too. We could put a couple of bets, and then we can props. We'll get stupid for the Super Bowl. We'll have 15 different things on the go. It'll be a Ryder
Cup. We'll figure it out.
We'll set up like 16 different bets so someone can go on
exactly.
a big run.
Exactly. And we need a crazy, like, couple crazy prop bets, too, for the Super Bowl.
But the winner, the spread, because it's been consistent all year, that'll be worth, you know, the most.
The most amount, sure.
Maybe that's what we do. Yeah, exactly. We put a certain amount on the actual spread, then a certain amount on the total, and then you can have one-offs and props if you call your props correctly. But if you get them wrong, you lose points. How's that?
Yeah, we'll do the whole nine.
Yeah, we'll get stupid. It'd be impossible for people to follow. We'll bother the audience. It'll be great. Yeah, it'll be great.
I'm in for it.
All right. Noodles, you look like you're off doing TV. I love the suit change at 6:45.
It's sitting right here. I just jump in.
It should be.
Away we go.
Is it the same suit every time you're on TV, or do you mix it up?
I've got like 50 suits. I just changed the shirt and tie.
I don't know.
No, it's not the same. Like, it's not the guy. There's a guy who cheers goals in St. Louis. He's in a white tux, and by the end of the season, it's like the tux is all like yellow and brown. Like, it's gritty. I don't, you know.
You mix it up. You're a man of integrity.
Exactly.
You got a wardrobe over there. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good stuff today. Thanks to Carlo, Al's brother, Chris Johnston, Jeff Saturday, Marcellus Wiley. Joe from the Bridge, Mullen, the Grappler, everyone behind the scenes.
All the big guys.
All the big guys behind the scenes. Exactly. It's been a fun one today. We're out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the games tonight. We're back tomorrow at?
You know it, Big Cat. 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.